Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to church this morning. If you're new to the church, we're glad you've chosen to worship with us today. My name is Eric Johnson. I've been a member here at First Unitarian for about 5 years. And I currently serve as the guy who Cleaver called to fill the pulpit last week in a panic. And so I said, sure, I'd love to come. In the pulpit, we had, and also we forgot to work out who was going to be the liturgist, so I get to do everything today. In the pulpit this morning, we have me, Eric Johnson, and assisted by Ken Heft. Everyone is invited to stay following this worship service for fellowship, conversation, and refreshments in our fellowship hall, the Kate Worker Room, just through these doors behind me. If you're a newcomer and would like to receive our newsletter for the next 3 months, to let you know about all the programs and activities going on here at the church, please fill out the card in the back of the hymnal and put the card in the offering plate or hand it to an usher. If you'd like to learn more about the church and about Unitarian Universalism, please visit the information displays in our fellowship hall where there are pamphlets, newsletters, and other visitor information that you are certainly welcome to take home with you. And now I invite you to turn to your neighbors and greet them, especially the ones you don't know yet. If you have a short announcement for the good of the church, please come to the microphone here in front.
I'm not sure this is for the good of the church, but I do want to announce that our Esperanto class will be meeting at 1:30, and even people who have not come to the class before are welcome. But I need to tell you, we're not going to be in the Emerson room. We're going to meet down in the basement, right at the foot of the stairs. Go to the left.
12:30.
At 12:30. I'm sorry, 12:30. Yeah, I said 1:30. 12:30 today. Thank you.
Hello. It was just suggested to me that the fourth Saturday lunch is in 2 weeks, and we can use toiletries. I don't know what the food situation is. There's a sign-up sheet. I don't think we have anything in terms of personal care items. I hear the last month it went swimmingly. And thank you, everybody. But this happens every month, so thank you.
Hi, I'm Sharon Johnson. I'm announcing that next Saturday, the 15th, is the Gender Bending Thrift Store Prom. We had a thrift store prom a couple of years ago, and it was so much fun. One of the ways we could be getting you to come is posting pictures from that one, but we haven't gotten on the ball enough to do that. Anyway, welcome.
If there are no more announcements, I invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any joys or milestones you may bring with you to church this morning. There will be time to share concerns and sorrows in a few moments.
A lot of you know I've had some rather emotionally and physically trying medical issues lately, and I just wanted to give a shout out to my church community for being there to help me through it. The online outpouring of love was exactly what I needed at exactly the time I needed. And in addition to that, a special thank you to Jen Timpey and Robin and Mickey and Allison for bringing me food when I was recovering from my surgery. So much love.
I'm Ron Glossop. And some of you know, because of Facebook and other places, that The previous week, I was in New York attending the International Council of Unitarian Universalists, our international movement. It's easy to remember, ICUU, the International Council of Unitarian Universalists, and you can Google on that, International Council of Unitarian Universalists. We meet, have an international meeting every other year. I was able to attend the meeting in Cluj, Romania, back in 2009. And this time, it was in the United States. There's a meeting every other year. Next year, it's going to be in the Netherlands. Yeah, 2015 will be in the Netherlands. So some of you might want to attend. It's very interesting. We have now Unitarians in many different countries. We had at this meeting, we had about 120 to 130 people, I'm not sure exactly how many, from maybe 12, 13 different countries, from some unexpected places like Bolivia and the Philippines, and expected places like Transylvania, which is now part of Romania, and from Germany and Italy and Belgium. It was a very international meeting, but everything, of course, went on in English because of the tradition of Unitarianism. But we are gradually moving away from just English-speaking countries into other countries. One of the things that we were asked to do is to bring a scarf so that each country would be represented. There were more there than people picked up at the end, and at the end they indicate anyone who wants to pick up a scarf, go ahead and pick it up. So I did. I thought this one was particularly pretty. It was supposed to be from some country, but it doesn't indicate what country it's from. And I see there's a label. It was produced in the People's Republic of China. Now, we had a fellow there from Hong Kong, and he might have brought it, but it might have been from anywhere else. But it was a very interesting meeting, and one I hope that all of us become more involved with the idea that Unitarian Universalism is no longer just confined to English-speaking countries. Thank you.
Now, about a year and a half ago, somebody conned me into doing the sermon on a Sunday. I'm not going to tell you who it was, but his initials are Eric Johnson. And he even admitted it was a con job.
I bet.
He told me that, I said, I'm not a public speaker. He said, if you're passionate about the subject, it's more important than being a public speaker. And your subject is humane treatment for animals. Now you know that I had to do it. Well, while I was doing it, I had Eric pass two pictures through the church of, this was my late three-legged world-famous dog, Casey. And these were pictures of a dog that spent 2 years in a puppy mill, like Casey did. It was his sister, Bonnie. When she was adopted by a hoarder, and she lived the same life for the next 7 years that she lived the first 2 years in the puppy mill. I got a tear. And that woman died. And then she was fostered by a couple, wonderful couple in San Diego, and they got somebody to adopt her. The woman saw her picture and said, I'm not taking a scroungy looking dog like that, you keep her. And we were emailing back and forth since this was Casey's sister. And I noticed a difference in the tone to her emails. So I sent an email to her and asked if she was by any chance thinking of keeping Bonnie. She sent an email back to me without one word in it, and the title of it was Bonnie Smith, her last name. They had adopted her. Yeah. Now, this woman is a well-known portrait artist, And any portrait she does, no matter how small, her bottom price is $3,000. She called me last week and said, send me a good picture of Casey. I'm going to do his portrait and send it to you.
Aww.
So I sent her the picture that's on my shirt.
Yay. What a nice job.
Thanks for putting up with me.
No. I actually have a joy. Many of you know that for the past 5 years I've been a hospice chaplain, and I'm actually leaving that career to take up a new career in social services. I've accepted a position. I've left Seasons Hospice, where I was in St. Louis. I've accepted a position with the state of Illinois in the Department of Human Services to be a caseworker. And so I will be working in East St. Louis, helping people obtain benefits, and I'm very excited. I'll get to use the same skills that I developed before in my hospice chaplaincy of giving care and motivation and love to people. I get to use the same skills, just in a different context. So I'm very excited, and it will give me the same holiday and day off schedule as my wife, Marty, who also works for the state. So I'm very pleased about that. Now, if there are any concerns or sorrows that you would like to share with us this morning.
Just positive energy, thoughts and prayers for my Uncle Raymond, who's in the hospital right now, has had a stroke, but things are looking better than they were. So just thoughts and prayers.
The prelude begins our worship service as I light our chalice. Come into this place of peace and let its silence heal your spirit. Come into this place of memory and let its history warm your soul. Come into this place of prophecy and power and let its vision change your heart. Let us worship together. Our first hymn is number 1018 in the Teal Hymnal, if you're of the old school nature and like to hold the book in your hand, or you may look up here. Please rise as you are able.
Go with me to that land, where I bow.
Please join in responsive reading number 589 found in the gray hymnal or on the board. It's entitled Peace by the pupils of the Lincoln School. Peace means the beginning of a new world. Peace is quiet and calm. It is rest. It is silence after a storm.
It is love and friendship. It is the world's dream of peace.
Peace brings comfort and happiness. It brings bread to the hungry. It brings prosperity to the nations.
It means the strong respect the weak, the great respect the small, the many respect the few.
It is like spring after winter.
It brings sunshine into the world. It is like sweet music after harsh sounds.
We've been greatly blessed. Let us now give generously so that others might be blessed by the work of the church. This morning's offering will now be given and received. I had a couple unexpected moments of grace this morning. One was that I forgot that we didn't have a children's thing, but two, that I also forgot to have a reading. So I get to combine both now, and I'm going to read to you from what is Unitarian Holy Scripture, really, by a Unitarian saint, Saint Seuss. Theodore Geisel was a Unitarian saint. Hallowed be his name. And so I shall read to you this morning, Oh, the Places You'll Go. And had the children been here and had it been children's time, I would have read that this to them. But I get to read it to you now. And I'll show you pictures. Congratulations. Today's your day. You're off to great places. You're off and away. You have brains in your head. You have feet in your shoes. You can steer yourself any direction you choose. You're on your way, and you know what you know, and you are the guy who will decide where to go. You'll look up and down streets, look them over with care. About some you will say, I don't choose to go there. With your head full of brains and your shoes full of feet, you're too smart to go down any not-so-good street. And you may not find any you'll want to go down. In that case, of course, you'll head straight out of town. It's open there in the wide open air. Out there, things can happen, and frequently do, to people as brainy and footsy as you. And when things start to happen, don't worry, don't stew. Just go right along. You'll start happening too. Oh, the places you'll go. You'll be on your way up. You'll be seeing great sights. You'll join the high flyers who soar to high heights. You won't lag behind because you'll have the speed. You'll pass the whole gang and you'll soon take the lead. Wherever you fly, you'll be the best of the best. Wherever you go, you will top all the rest. Except when you don't, because sometimes you won't. I'm sorry to say so, but sadly it's true that bang-ups and hang-ups can happen to you. You can get all hung up in a prickly perch, and your gang will fly on. You'll be left in a lurch. You'll come down from the lurch with an unpleasant bump, and the chances are then that you'll be in a slump. And when you're in a slump, you're not in for much fun. Unslumping yourself is not easily done. You will come to a place where the streets are not marked, some windows are lighted, but mostly they're dark. A place you could sprain both your elbow and chin. Do you dare stay out? Do you dare go in? How much can you lose? How much can you win? And if you go in, should you turn left or right, or right or three quarters, or maybe not quite? Or go around back and sneak in from behind. Simple it's not, I'm afraid, that you will find, for a mind maker upper to make up his mind. You can get so confused that you'll start in to race down long winkled roads at a breaknecking pace and grind on for miles across weirdish wild space, headed, I fear, towards a most useless place, the waiting place. For people just waiting for a train to go, or a bus to come, or a plane to go, or the mail to come, or the rain to go, or a phone to ring, or the snow to snow, or waiting around for a yes or a no, or waiting for their hair to grow, everyone is just waiting. Waiting for the fish to bite, or waiting for a wind to fly a kite, or waiting around for Friday night, or waiting perhaps for their Uncle Jake, or a pot to boil, or a better break, or a string of pearls, or a pair of pants, or a wig with curls, or another chance. Everyone is just waiting. No, that's not for you. Somehow you'll escape all that waiting and staying. You'll find bright places where boom bands are playing. With banner flip-flapping, once more you'll ride high, ready for anything under the sky, ready because you're that kind of guy. Oh, the places you'll go, there is fun to be done, there are points to be scored, there are games to be won, and the magical things you can do with that ball will make you the winningest winner of all. Fame, you'll be famous as famous can be, with the whole wide world watching you on TV. Except when they don't, because sometimes they won't. I'm afraid that sometimes you'll play lonely games too, games you can't win because you'll play against you. All alone, whether you like it or not, alone will be something you'll be quite a lot. And when you're alone, there's a very good chance you'll meet things that are scare you right out of your pants. There are some down the road between hither and yon that can scare you so much you won't want to go on. But you will go. But on you will go, though the weather be foul. You will go on through your enemy's prowl. On you will go through the hack and crack's howl. Onward up many a frightening creek, though your arms may get sore and your sneakers may leak. On and on you will hike, and I know you will hike far and face up your problems wherever they are. You'll get mixed up, of course, as you already know. You'll get mixed up with the strange birds as you go. So be sure when you step, step with care and great tact. And remember that life's a great balancing act. Just never forget to be dexterous and deft, and never mix up your right foot with your left. And will you succeed? Yes, you will indeed. 98.75% guaranteed. Kid, you'll move mountains. So, be your name Buxbaum or Bixby or Bray or Mordecai, Allie, Van Allen, O'Shea. You're off to great places. Today is your day. Your mountain is waiting. So get on your way. Thus ends the reading of the Holy World Word. St. Seuss, be with us now in the moment of our literary need. If we could now bow our head in a prayer. Loving and gracious, let us be open. Let us find love. Let us find grace. Let us find care. Let us find strength. And let us find voice, though silent and still, for those things upon our heart of which we cannot speak in this moment of silence. With all the new changes around my house, and with my previous job as a hospice chaplain, I came across a lot of time to think about a subject which came across my path quite often over the last 5 years, and that is of class. And so the title of my sermon is Upper, Lower, Middle, Meaning. I came across a lot of situations and a lot of times that made me think of this, and so I found it that I was ready to finally write something on it. And when I was in seminary at Meadville Lombard, class was often a topic, although I have to admit that I didn't like the topic and often actively tried to change it. My best friend, the Reverend Dr. Curtis Carroll, was always on about class. Curtis, do we have to talk about class again? But Curtis was from Louisiana, and he was from a rather poor rural Louisiana, and done two things to bring class in the front of his mind. He'd worked as a Methodist parish pastor for many years in northern Louisiana, and also worked in the, you'll love this, Dr. Glossop, the United Nations Refugee Office. And he got to see a lot of different situations. Curtis knew a great deal about class, and he wrestled with class in a way that I kind of am now. Social class, privileged class, cultural class, intellectual class, so many classes get mixed up, mashed up, and put together these days. I mean, look at this church. Look around you and see the mixture. But how many of you internally winced when I asked you to look around and see the mixture? We Unitarian Universalists don't really like to distinguish, to, dare I say it, judge others like that. And I get it. I want to maintain a world without judgment. I want to believe in a world where I'm accepted and welcomed. And I think it's super important in a congregation to be accepted and welcomed. As a matter of fact, I'd say it's an intentional focus of ours, and that's really something I love about this special place, as Stephen Mead used to say. But judging happens, and it happens all the time, whether we wish it or not. We religious liberals can judge just as harshly. Ask any Republican or conservative Unitarian Universalist, they will tell you that they often feel ostracized or looked down upon. To illustrate this, we can do a bit of a circle of truth, as a colleague of mine used to say at Seasons Hospice. And I'm going to ask for your interaction. I'd like to come back at me honestly with what comes to mind when I say these words. So when I say a word, I just shout it out. Upper class. Rich. What else? Snooty. 1%. Okay. Greedy. Any others? Privileged. Okay. Here's another one. Elite. What do you think of? What comes to mind? Elite. What?
Unfamiliar.
Country club.
Ivory dollar.
Excellent. Okay. Occupy.
Wall Street.
That's an easy one. Or occupy anything. No, it's a big term. Lower class.
Working.
Poor.
Blue collar.
Trailer. Okay. Working class. We already kind of mentioned it. Working class.
Struggling.
Labor. What? Labor. Okay. How about middle class? Disappearing.
Spendable.
Strong. What?
Rat race.
Rat race.
Buffer.
Haves.
Them.
have mores. Have nots. What about have nots? Okay. All right. This is a good one. This moocher class. Fox News. Yeah, that's what I think of when I. What? Okay. Okay. See, these are all judgments, good or bad. They're judgments that we made attached to words. So how do we square judgments with our Unitarian Universalist aspirations, our principles and purposes? The hymnal's in front of you. Go ahead and take them out. The gray hymnal. Open them, I think it's about page 6 or so, right before the first hymn number 1. Find the principles and purposes page. It says, we the congregations of, okay. Go ahead and read that first paragraph about human dignity and worth and those. Just glance through it. You got it? Found it. Yeah, it's just before page 1. Yep. That's right. That's right there. We, the member congregation, read this paragraph right there, just real quick. Okay, and as you're reading, I'd say those are about as anti-judgment and open and affirming as we can be, right? I mean, we're inclusive, we love and value everybody, it's all cool, it's all good, it's the world we want. But when I look around the room, I see difference, or as we like to say, diversity. Judgment is still going to come into play at some point. Who we're going to love, who we're going to value, cherish, support, comes from a very active form of judgment. But again, how do we square judgment with justice and equity for all? How do they square it in the past? Well, they managed a few solutions to the problem. Since we Unitarian Universalists used to be two different faiths, let me take them apart and address them separately. Then I'll mash them back together and see what we get. And as a bonus, I will prophesy about what we're going to, where we're going in the future. And I couldn't help myself because I've always wanted to say prophesy from the pulpit. I'll go with the Unitarians first. Unitarians talk a great game, but they didn't even try to address class until the late 19th century, and with the social gospel movement. We'll talk about that in a minute. But let me back up. Here's a quick elevator definition of Unitarianism. And sorry for those who don't know that phrase. An elevator definition is a definition that's done in the time it takes for an elevator to go up a few floors. A very quick snapshot. Unitarianism is a quite old heresy, actually, which denies the Trinity of Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. It found the division unscriptural and theologically problematic. Thus, Unitarians believe in one or a unitary God. Okay, we got that? Now, when you take this basic belief and run it through the mill of real life, what you get is a product of belief, like wheat being ground into flour. That flour makes bread or cookies or whatever. That flour can be likened to a term which I adore. It's theological anthropology. And theological anthropology is how the divine and the human worlds mix together, okay? That flower or that base belief system of ours is mixed with other elements to form different outcomes like bread, okay? And in this case, base beliefs get run through the mill of real life and outcomes a product. Now with Unitarianism, if you don't have God, Jesus, and the Holy Ghost being equal, it necessitates a hierarchy. Now, again, this is the classical definition of Unitarianism. It's not where we are now, okay? So don't start giving me the stink eye. Father, Son, Holy Ghost, stepwise. And if Jesus is not God, then Jesus was a man, a great man, they maintained, classical Unitarians did, one to be followed. Look at the Bible that Thomas Jefferson put together. Okay, Thomas Jefferson took the four interpretations of the Bible that he could get a hold of, and he went crazy with the scissors and the paste, and he cut and pasted his own version of the Bible. And what he stripped away was all the miracles. Because what he was trying to do was come up with the philosophy of Jesus, which is what he felt was important. So you take the divinity out, and then you get the exemplar of Jesus. And that exemplar is the one we were to aspire to. But during that period, we'd gone through centuries of people like Calvin and the likes telling us that we are deprived and lowly people. But along comes the heyday of Unitarianism and the founding of this nation, and we have the product, the cake, if you will, of self-determination, that we can govern ourselves, that we can produce great works by ourselves, that we have agency, that we can cut and paste the Bible and come up with a better temporary meaning. Meaning, I can have a great effect on the outcome of my situation, agency. The great Protestant work ethic is affirmed. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. If Jesus could do it, so could we. The personal responsibility Protestant work ethic stuff that conservatives are espousing to justify the reduction in food stamps has roots, in a small part, in our Unitarian belief system. I know that's hard to swallow. We Unitarians at the founding of this nation pushed personal responsibility and self-reliance in matters spiritual and theological. Jesus figured it out, so can we. It was the trajectory of the Protestant Reformation that we were on. Now, going back to class, I'm sure you can immediately see that Unitarianism was the favorite theology of the elite, the upper class of Boston. Although it wasn't all elitism, think about the movie. How many of you have seen the movie Amistad? You seen the movie Amistad? Okay. Amistad was a movie about John Quincy. It's a real life event. John Quincy Adams, a Unitarian, fights in future present, fights and wins a legal battle on behalf of black slaves on the ship Amistad. He did this because of these Unitarian beliefs that those captured Africans had inherent worth and dignity, as we would say now. So there are wonderful things that came out of this theological trajectory. But when you believe tremendously in human agency or power to control situations, you can also develop a blind spot to human suffering and tragedy. If an individual has the ability to change their circumstances, then those who do not have good circumstances are either, from this trajectory, lazy or ignorant, or may deserve to be in that lower station. Do you see that, how that trajectory leads to that? We, the elite Unitarians, in our noblesse oblige, or noble obligation, should support charity and provide minimally for the less fortunate. This was the belief. This attitude exists still, though, in many of our churches. There's a church that I know of that has a wonderful social time making sandwiches for the food pantry, and then one person delivers them to the shelter. It keeps the poverty, those people, at arm's length. We don't want them in our congregation, in our building. They are dangerous, they smell bad, and might harm our children. Now, what's really bad is that's an actual quote that a woman said to me 2 years ago from this congregation. Incidentally, I love the fact that we in this congregation, as far as I know, have never been like that. Now, it may have been previously, but the congregation I know has not been that way. That we invite those people, not even those people, we invite guests into our church home, in our spiritual home. But going back, so the upshot of the Unitarian theological anthropology, or that trajectory, is the raising up of human potential and agency. Be all that you can be, as the Army says. But if you're obviously not all you can be, it's probably your fault. I might assist you, but really, you just stay over there. That's the result of that trajectory. Universalism, on the other hand, was the belief that Jesus saved us all, forward and back in time. Jesus saved the lot of us, because we're all screwed up, and thank God, with this, we can all go to heaven. Scripturally, there is support for this theology. When I was growing up in the religiously charged atmosphere of Tulsa, Oklahoma, land of the televangelists, there was a great megachurch preacher I used to hear, Carlton Pearson. And man, could this guy preach. I could sit there and listen to him preach from the phone book. About 20 years ago, Pastor Pearson had an epiphany and he realized the truth of the universal gospel, that a just and loving God accepts us all. He embraced universalism and promptly lost his pulpit. For years, actually, he held a service at All Souls Unitarian Church in Tulsa, which is the world's largest brick and mortar UU church. But you can now immediately see that universalism, universal acceptance into heaven by God, would benefit the working and the lower classes. Everybody gets in. Everybody is saved. Everybody is free in the end, free from suffering, free from sin. Jesus paid the price for it all. Just hold on, and everything will work out in the end. Death and glory was actually a universalist battle cry. You die, and then you go to glory. Now, I happen to love the universalist acceptance and grace message because I feel screwed up, messed up, incomplete, flawed, and it comforts me greatly to feel divine acceptance and the acceptance motif from others. I love it. But the fly in the ointment, or batter, since we're playing with the whole mill flower motif, is we lose agency, or the ability to control and have effectiveness. Universalism can give up trying to improve things. Just hold on and you will go to heaven, is the upshot of universalism. But the drive to improve, or even the belief that you can push towards the divine, is gone because Jesus paid the whole tab. This is, again, the classical universalist trajectory. Now, in fairness to both Unitarianism and Universalism, they worked a lot jointly on their class problem during a movement called the Social Gospel Movement. And what's really fun, actually, is on NPR, you can catch the grandson of Walter Rauschenbusch. It's a name you can't forget, right? Rauschenbusch. Every now and then you can hear, I can't remember what his name is, but Rauschenbusch. That's the grandson of the kind of godfather of the social gospel movement, Walter Rauschenbusch. Walter Rauschenbusch, during the last part of the 19th century, started this movement. Social gospel proposed that we can improve the lot of the poor and improve all people by creating and maintaining better social systems. We can have hospitals, roads, social institutions, aid societies, temperance, suffrage, things we totally take for granted now arose in great part, the modern forms of them arose during this great liberalization of society. The theological issue of this drive was the social gospel. Both Unitarians and Universalists were heavily involved in this, but in different ways. All this work on social issues finally brought Unitarianism and Universalism so close that they decided to join as one. And today you have, in reality, I think, more of a faith designed for the middle class, a faith that strives upward to improve agency or personal effectiveness, but also accepts and strives towards inclusivity. Open the hymnal again and look at those principles and purposes. Do you see the mix now? Do you see the blend? Upward focus, we can do it, but everybody should be included in it. Yet now we are in a postmodern world of gray in reality. Those are wonderful words there, our principles and purposes, and they inspire me. But we have to face reality. It's a crappy, harsh world out there, and I would venture to say that everyone in this room has been abused by, used by, and disappointed by this world we face. We can no longer say that our kids are going to have it better. I don't think they are. We could try our best to prepare them, but I will admit that many times I feel lost and helpless. Helpless, really, and I guess that's why Universalism is appealing to me a lot lately. I feel comforted that I'll be accepted. I want to be accepted and loved by whatever it is out there. Even though I personally don't believe that the tab was paid for by Jesus, I go Unitarian on that. Jesus, for me, was an exemplar, a social justice exemplar. But the world is rapidly splitting between the 1% haves and the 99%. And we have haves and a great number of have-nots. And in an article I read just last night on Facebook, it identified a new category. Well, maybe it's not new, but it's the first time I saw it. Used to haves. Oh, yeah. See, that got some action there. And I'm sure we've got stories in this room. But regardless, it's scary. So where does our faith lead us now? How will we navigate this frightening new world that we have grown into? And to be honest, I'm not sure. We can take from the lessons of the past, for instance, Unitarians. We can utilize the good and bad from the Unitarians and Universalists. We can keep striving to improve and affect change while not being blind and insensitive and callous to others. We can accept and love all, extending to all dignity and worth without giving up on improving our lot or the lot of others. But I'll be honest, I'm not seeing a way that's fitting with these old ways. I have a new favorite show, and I think many of you share this with me. It's Downton Abbey. If you don't know Downton Abbey is a show about English moneyed aristocratic family in their manor house with the drama upstairs and downstairs between the family and the servants. In the show, though, you can see class and social change happening. Women are getting jobs in this. This is turn of the century and around World War I. Women getting jobs. Branson, the chauffeur, runs off with Lord Grantham's daughter. Branson is always going on about social justice and change in Ireland. And he's talking about socialism and class. And you can see the hints of things to come in this show. See the changes happening, and you get hints. And in my own life, I sense hints. And I challenge you to look in your own life for those hints of change happening. Again, honoring that diversity between us all, I'm not going to be like the pastor or the minister of past who tell you what you're supposed to see. I can only say what I see, and you see what you see, and hopefully we can work together. But I see access to internet and instantaneous knowledge acquisition as a total game changer. Marty had a set of Encyclopedia Britannicas next to her dining room table growing up, and they would consult the Encyclopedia Britannica whenever there was a question. They would look it up in the encyclopedia about whatever they were talking about, if they could. But there's hardly a night now when my family doesn't check up something on the computer in the kitchen, next to the kitchen table, or look up a YouTube video. Knowledge and ideas are moving at light speed, and it's incidentally why I think conservatives are screeching so loud these days. It's moving and changing too fast. The faster the change goes, the louder they get. I'm not saying that they're wrong, but I think you may have noticed that the tone and timbre of what we're hearing, especially from Fox News, has raised. Again, I'm not saying they're wrong. But where I find hope for the future in all of this, where I get the clues, is in watching my children and the kids of others. Look how fast and quick they are mixing artistic and intellectual mediums. They make music, art, thought so creatively and innovatively and in ways that I can hardly conceive of. And I'm continually stunned when one of my kids says, I know that song, or they've heard that movie, or can quote something back to me, or they'll take a concept that I've just said and they'll go, oh, that's like this, and they'll quote some other movie or sing some song. I'm like, I don't even know that song. And so we go to the computer in the kitchen and we look up YouTube videos, and then we go back and forth like that, exchanging context, exchanging ideas, and we develop quickly. Now, it's true that internet is not available to everyone, but the advent of smartphones has gone a long way towards democratization and the leveling out of what used to be very solid class lines. Just a century and a half ago, think about this, if I were growing up a century and a half ago in Tulsa, Oklahoma, I would have had very little exposure to classical music, I would probably imagine. Actually, probably none. And yet, I went on to get a degree in French horn performance. I hadn't really listened to jazz or soul much until about 10 years ago. My kids now have an immense knowledge of music because they have access and they explore. I believe the internet is going to change class and social structures of our society. Now, this is another moment of interaction. And I would like you to think rigidly for a moment. Set yourself within hard boundaries of the old world kind of social class. And think about the characteristics when I say these. What are the characteristics of upper class? Wealth. Power. Privilege. Education. What? Country club. Okay. What are the characteristics of the middle class?
Workers.
What?
Workers.
Okay. Working. Beer. Diligence.
Beer.
Beer. Interesting. Okay.
School.
Public. Okay. Lower class.
Crime.
Hopeless. Struggling.
Scary.
Okay. Now think about the characteristics of our youth culture. Okay, let's hear some. When you think of youth, how are the youth? What are the characteristics?
Opportunity.
Opportunity?
The future.
Okay.
Seems bleak
What characteristics? Open, accepting. Adaptable, cynical. Okay. Spoiled, okay. I also see them being very, okay, less judgmental, more open. That's good. Experimental, innovative. I like their ability to compile and coalesce and take myriad data and fit it together in new ways. Okay, well, yeah, what are their challenges? The characteristics of their challenges. Short attention span. I think they're disappointed easily.
I don't know if it's a disadvantage, but they're changing the way we communicate.
Changing the way we communicate. Good.
And change is coming quickly.
Right. And I think they can get discouraged easily sometimes.
Yeah, I think they're impatient.
Impatient.
Adult issues much younger than we were.
Bingo. Bingo. When we talk about these characteristics, think back to Downton Abbey and how we got hints of what was going on, what the issues were, the good and the bad from Downton Abbey. Think about what we just said and put that, it's the thought for you to think about as what is to come. Those characteristics are going to shape the class structures of the future. Those who have access to information, those who can quickly coalesce disparate ideas, those who become discouraged quickly will fall behind. Those who cannot have access or don't have access to these skills will fall behind. It will start to stratify based upon those lines. Now, what I've done is actually just an example. I crowdsourced you to work on a problem, getting input, assessing, putting together, trying to get a temporary better, something that makes a bit more sense. I didn't tell you what the answer was like a minister would have in the past. We kind of found that temporary discussion together, utilizing our unique, diverse tools. I have skills, you have skills, I have challenges, you have challenges, but we work together inclusively to develop. And I would say that what we are seeing now in the future is the development of a whole new class, the development of a meaning class, interactive, inclusive, adaptive. This class of people makes the best of their circumstances and infuses their situation with meaning, be it art, music, word, thought, care. And we in this congregation are engaged mightily in this personally and in this place of gathering, our special place. Now, I've pointed to something, but I'm not going to go any further. We must go together into this world. And frankly, as in generations before, we must look to the young to guide us, but we must also look to the old to guide us, and we must look to the middle aged to guide us. Because guidance is now everywhere in almost every form, and we have access to that guidance like we never have before. But through it, we must keep moving forward in love, grace, and acceptance. And now we'll sing hymn number 95 in the gray hymnal, or soon to be maybe up on the board. Oh, I'm sorry, hymn number 151. I wish I knew how. Please rise as you are able. The limits of our technological world.
There we go.
Go now into this new world. Go with grace, go with love, go with gentleness. Receive grace, love, and gentleness, and give grace, love, and gentleness to this world.